This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross. Martin Short is taking on a new stage role, starring opposite Jason Alexander in a Los Angeles production of The Producers. Also, his TV series Primetime Glick has begun its third season on Comedy Central. The show is a satire of celebrity interview shows, with real celebrities showing up to endure the irreverent and often irrelevant questions by overweight talk host Jiminy Glick. Here's Martin Short as Jiminy, asking actor Brendan Fraser about his first movie role.
Now, let me ask you this. Your first film was Encino Man.
Yes?
Oh, I love that. You played Link.
I did, yeah.
Then you play a Jew. You played a Jewish man.
Yes, I did.
And that was risky to play a Jew in Hollywood. In the 90s. What went through your head taking that kind of risk?
Well, I made sure that it was a film that had meaning.
But why a Jew?
Well, the character was actually just a kid. He was a football player, and he just wanted to belong. And he was willing to do anything to be a part of a group, even to deny who he was fundamentally as a person.
That's wrong. You should embrace whoever you are.
Well, that was the point.
If you're a Buddhist, be happy you're a Buddhist. If you're Muslim, be happy that you're Muslim. If you're Episcopalian, hide that fact.
To Martin Short, obsessing about Hollywood and celebrity is nothing new. When he first visited Fresh Air in 1989, he told Terry about some of his childhood fantasies about show business.
Now, I've read about you that when you were young, you used to do an imaginary TV show in your room that would run on alternate weeks in your imagination with the Andy Williams show.
Yes, that is very true, and we were canceled too, finally, which is a tragedy. Hullabaloo, I think, replaced us. Yes, I used to, it was 8:30 Mondays in my mind.
Right.
And we'd tape ahead, you know, we'd have shows in the can. And I'd type things up for TV Guide, you know, highlights Marty will sing. And I would come out, and I had a Frank Sinatra The Sands album, so I used that as an applause record. And then, you know, I'd use intros from albums, and I'd have a guest, you know, my guest would be Tony Bennett, and Tony would come out and say, "Forget your troubles, come on, get happy. The Lord is waiting to take your hand." I'd sing another song, I just don't remember the words, you know, and he'd be my guest, and then I would, you know, sing with him, you know, with the record, and then I'd go to the applause, and I'd, you know, piece it together, reel to reel. And then I would take, you know, the Playboy of that month and do the interview with Eldridge Cleaver or something, and, you know, I'd sit and you say that we're not moving fast, and, you know, and I'd then read his part, and then I'd end with a medley, and then someone would call dinner, and we'd tape later.
Did you sit on a stool and sing like Perry and Andy used to?
Oh, sure, yeah. But sometimes I just throw that stool aside and belt out a big final.
Because that's the kind of informal guy you are.
There was no one restraining me.
So, who were your sponsors?
Bull of a Watch was a biggie. And the Kraft people.
they did.
No cigarettes even then.
They did Perry Como.
Yeah. Kraft. Well, I know. They were very generous to help me out as well.
Why, if you were doing an imaginary show, would you have it alternate every other week with Andy Williams? Why not be on every other week?
How could I do my films?
Every week, I mean. What?
How could I do my films?
Oh. Yes.
Remember,
yes,
I was directing as well.
Now, when you were doing these shows, were they serious in your mind, or were they parodies of the show? I mean, were you doing them for real, or were...
No, it was real. I had a fantasy world that wouldn't quit, you know. I mean, I would, if I got on the back of a bus, I would go to the back of the bus where the windows were kind of oval shaped, you know,
mm-hmm.
So that I'd have more of a sense of riding in a limousine. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and if I looked out the window, or I'd pretend I was, you know, on an airplane taxing off, and fans, and, you know, this is a 10. I was just intrigued. It wasn't like Rupert Pumpkin, or wasn't it?
Rupert Pumpkin, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't that sick, you know. It was clearly a fun hobby, you know. It was fun, and while other kids my age were protesting, you go to have a revolution, I was up in my room singing, "Weather-wise, it's such a cuckoo day," you know. But certainly I in no way did it become something that I, you know, would answer to two different names or anything.
Did your imaginary show have a theme? A song?
No, there would be a production number, you know, kind of opening, which would be similar, where dancers come out and go, "Marty, it's time for Marty." But, I mean, that wasn't a real theme.
Oh, what a nut.
Yeah. Sad, huh?
Terry Gross talking with Martin Short in 1989. Martin Short got his start doing sketch comedy on SCTV, where he created the characters Ed Grimley, Jackie Rogers Jr., and songwriter Irving Cohen. Later, he took those characters to Saturday Night Live. In primetime Glick, Short wears a prosthetic fat suit and improvises with his celebrity guests by asking intentionally bizarre questions. Terry spoke with Martin Short about the creation of this new character last year. At that time, here's the way Jiminy treated guest star Ben Stiller.
There's so much I want to ask about. There's so much. Your father, let's talk about Jerry Stiller. Mm-hmm. He's in the wonderful series Queer as Folk.
No.
What series is he in?
You're mistaken. He's on King of Queens.
Oh, that's what they're calling it now.
Yes.
And your mother is Anne Heche, and she's had the worst time of it, hasn't she? She's had this because she thought she was a lesbian.
No.
And then she thought she was a normal person. And then before you know it, she's talking to aliens. How weird is it to be the daughter of clearly someone who's that insane?
I couldn't tell you that because, unfortunately, you've got her mixed up. It's not Anne Heche, it's Anne Mira.
Anne Mira!
Right.
See, I like her better than Anne Heche.
Yes.
Well, wonder you've got all that DNA raising for you, all that comedic DNA that's got to be wonderful.
Do you have demons, Ben Stiller?
I think we all have demons,
you
Jiminy.
Demon.
I think we all do.
Martin Short, welcome back to Fresh Air. Let's start with Jiminy Glick. Can you give us like a capsule bio of who this character is?
Jiminy Glick is someone who grew up, was privately tutored with his parents until he was around 28. Then he went out into the real world and saw a wonderful production of 40 Carats, touring with Lana Turner, auditioned, got in as onlooker number two, then went to Los Angeles, where for 6 years he worked at Chasen's as a busboy. And at one night catering a party at Roddy McDowell's, the very drunken George Schlatter was helped home, declaring that a host for a syndicated show that he wanted had walked out because they didn't accept George's double scale approach. And after that, the rest is history. I was asked to do the show, and before you know it, I'm suddenly talking to the likes of yous.
Why is it so important for Jiminy Glick to always be in touch with celebrities?
I don't know. I think that Jiminy is someone who thrives on this shallow world of celebrity. When I started the show, and then it went on the air, and then I would read some response to it, only the positive, of course, that would claim great, you know, declarations of intent, you know, the ultimate satire of a form of a blanket of blank. And I would just say, absolutely. But it's not always true. Sometimes you set up by just saying that this character, if you met him in life, whether he was a teacher or whether he was a politician or whether he was a celebrity interviewer, would make you laugh because of his strange, sincere take on the world and how wrong it is.
And he has a great mix of self-involvement and insecurity.
Right. Where I can laugh at Jiminy objectively is when he gets very sincere and feels he's doing a hard-hitting, tough interview. And the finger is pointing. And he says in the show, which is, I think, with Dave Duchovny, he says, "I worry about Robert Downey. Do you worry about Robert Downey?" And Duchovny says, "Yes." He says, I feel like cornering him and saying, "Bobby, stop it," and "Stay, stopped it." And Duchovny says, "I think that's what he needs. He needs someone to point their finger at him and say, 'Stay, stopped.'" And in Jiminy's world, he thinks he's doing exactly what Charlie Rose would do.
Are your interviews on Primetime Glick scripted? When you have on real celebrities and you're playing this satire of a celebrity interviewer, do the real celebrities know what you're going to ask in advance, and have they already had a chance to think through how they're going to respond?
No, none of it is planned, and none of it's scripted.
no one knows what I'm going to say, and I don't know what I'm going to say. I have pages in front of me that have facts about the celebrity, and often I won't even look at it until the last second because Jiminy wouldn't look at it till the last second.
Right, and you have a way of choosing the most unimportant movie that an actor's made to zero in on. Sometimes when you have an actor on the show who you're interviewing, they're clearly like trying to not totally crack up because mm-hmm. they think what you're doing is really funny, but they want to stay in character as if this was a real show.
Right.
Do you advise them not to laugh, if at all possible?
No. What we used to, I know that when in last season when we were cutting some of the early shows, I was very self-conscious about them laughing. It seemed kind of cheesy to me that I would be executive producing the show that has people sitting back going, "Oh, Marty, how can I get through this?" It felt a little self-serving. Then, as I would look at it again, I'd think, you know, I'm wrong. It's just, it's natural. It's fun.
Now, one of the things that the Jiminy Glick show does is break for commercials, as most broadcast shows do, but these are all satirical commercials. I thought maybe we could break for one of your commercials from Primetime Glick, and this is a commercial for the Independent Film Channel.
This Monday on the Independent Movie Channel's Best of the Fest, Robin Herker's Explaining Carlo, the explosive story of two young heroin addicts who drive cross-country and strike up a relationship with two Texas lesbians. Then on Tuesday, two different lesbians on their way to L.A. strike up a relationship with a heroin-addicted ex-security guard from Texas in Kira Sandoval's controversial The Wisdom of Sarah Finkelman. Then on Wednesday, two ex-lesbians are drawn back into their former lifestyle when they pick up three heroin-addicted hitchhikers.
That's one of the very funny satirical commercials from Martin Short's show Prime Time Glick. Do you write any of those commercials yourself?
Yes.
Good. They're very funny.
Yeah. Well, I work with two brilliant guys. One is Michael Short and one is Paul Flaherty. And the three of us create the show together.
Is Michael Short a relation?
Yes, he's a brother.
Uh-huh.
And my big brother, Mike.
Is Paul Flaherty related to...
Joe Flaherty,
Joe
brother.
Joe Flaherty, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, wow. All in the family.
They're all obviously I grew up with Michael, but I met Paul on SCTV, which Michael also wrote.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. You said that when you were a kid, you really, you know, wanted to be a celebrity yourself. So do you feel like on some level you really understand Jiminy Glick's need to be famous and to be with famous people?
Well, I don't know if he needs to be with famous people as much as that for Jiminy, these shallow tidbits that make up his life are important. They're fascinating. But more importantly, society has rewarded him. He does have his own show. He does live in a nice house. He is watched. And he couldn't be less qualified to be in his position. He's not the only person in the entertainment world that has that position.
So when you were young and you were watching all these TV shows and doing your imaginary show, did you have any training? Did your mother say, send this boy to acting school or give him singing lessons, develop that talent?
No. My mother was the concert mistress of the symphony. She was the first female concertmaster, actually. So I grew up with, at times during the season, 5 hours and of practice heard within the house on a violin. So the idea of rehearsal and opening night was not foreign. But no, I think growing up in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, you don't instinctively, Broadway isn't down the street, so it all seems not terribly realistic. So it wasn't until I was in university and having done theater throughout university, realized that there was actually an acting scene in Toronto, Ontario, which was 40 miles away, and that it was not inconceivable to take a year off school and try it.
Did your mother measure talent according to more classical standards of rigorous studies and a more legit kind of singing voice than you probably had? You had a more pop voice.
No, you know what? It was very interesting. She was always very encouraging. In fact, I have... When I was 15, Frank Sinatra had released an album called September of My Years. And I re-recorded that. I typed all the lyrics. And I had an attic bedroom, and the hallway to the bedroom was kind of had an echo to it. So I set up my chair. I had a microphone, reel-to-reel. And I would play the introductions from the Sinatra album. But it would be, and of course, Frank was 53 and I was 14. But the introductions would be in his key, so it would be... And here, click. Strangers in the night. Too long. I was in Frank's keys. But I would do the album, and it would take me about a week, I'd make up an album cover, and then my mother, I remember, listened to it and critiqued it because she used to adjudicate at certain, violin contests and things in her life, and so she wrote a synopsis of a critique of each song, and this the pitch was very good, lovely old song, well phrased at the end, hold the note too long here. And rated on as 4 stars, 3 stars, 3.5 stars, So I still have that.
Wait, was that helpful?
It was helpful. I think it was mainly helpful because someone was taking my fantasy world very seriously and treating it with credibility and respect. Frank Sinatra once said that his father was always around to piss on his dreams. And I think it's very important for parents to... constantly nurture and support eclectic interests of their children, because you never know which one is going to become the fuel that drives their life.
Getting back to the to Primetime Glick, Jiminy Glick has a sidekick and band leader whose name is Adrian Von Voorhees, a great name, I have to say, and he plays harp. Michael McKean plays the character. Can you talk about coming up with this character?
Well, I certainly didn't come up with the character Michael did, but we kind of wrote it in a direction. It was... You kind of find that the more things you do with characters, the more you come up with it. We'd be writing something, and Michael would come in, and he'd say, Michael said, I want to play him... like he's older, but he wears a lot of makeup to hide it. So that becomes part of the character. Does he like Jiminy? He doesn't dislike Jiminy, but it's a job. So if Jiminy insults him or cuts him off, he goes, very good, no problem, because it's a job. One of the episodes, his first wife, who's around 85, is on. It's one of those scenarios where we assume that he's married, his first wife was 20 years older. She's a horn player, and he just loses it. And there's a tape of Buddy Rich, pirated tape of Buddy Rich screaming at the band on a bus, wants his band, and so we made that Adrian Van Voorhees. So we come back from commercial, and he's just berating. Clams, you're hitting nothing but clams! And so that's a new side of Adrian, the side of Adrian losing it. So that's what makes that stuff fun, is you keep saying, what if Adrian... was in a bad mood this show, or what if Adrian gets hurt? I interviewed Michael last year, Michael McKean, as Adrian, and the idea was that Russell Crowe hadn't shown up, and now we had to interview Adrian Van Voorhees. And at one point, again, it's all improvised, I asked him something about, I made some comment about the fact that he wasn't terribly educated, that was that ever a limitation as a musician? And Michael's face completely changed, and he started to tear up. Real tears. And there was a split second that even I, as Jiminy, thought, wait a second, have I mentioned something that's actually gotten Michael upset? I mean, it was so real. And he then proceeded to let me know, as Adrian Van Voorhees, that this was a very hurtful subject for him, and I could be hurtful sometimes and insensitive. And that he was always, it was a sore spot for him, his lack of education. And it was an amazing exercise to watch, even after all these years of improvising, to see someone that into it and to make it that real.
So how did your character, Jiminy Glick, react when...
He became very, oh my God, Adrian, I so didn't mean that. I mean, he became a little bit attentive to the possibility that he'd gone too far. You know, Jiminy Glick has no intention of hurting anyone. And when people get upset when they walk off or they storm out, what have I done? Someone explain to me what I have done. He doesn't know.
Well, Martin Short, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Martin Short speaking with Terry Gross in 2002. He's currently starring on TV in Comedy Central's Primetime Glick and on stage in a Los Angeles production of the Mel Brooks musical The Producers opposite Jason Alexander.